Welcome.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm Cynthia Pooler, which you probably know by now. But my guest today is Jed Prasher. And Jed is a Common Council member, and he's in the 11th District, right, Jed?
That's right. I don't know who you are, Cynthia. I never met you in my life.
Yeah, okay. And Jed is here to talk about the latest developments going on the Common Council. Hi, Jed. We're getting down to crunch time with the budget, and there's a whole bunch of other issues that are going on. But I'm here to talk about the recent appointment that was made, in which you were the only council member who had voiced a dissenting view on it. Can you tell our listeners what happened?
Yeah, I'm getting kind of used to being the lone dissenting voice on things, Cynthia. But what happened is the mayor made the appointment of Robert McGee to be the director of the Buildings and Regulatory Compliance Department codes, which, as we all know, is a very, very important department. It's also a really dysfunctional department, if not the most dysfunctional department in the city of Albany right now. So that appointment was made, and the first step in any confirmation process is that the nominee appears before the relevant committee. And in this case, it's the Law, Buildings, and Code Enforcement Committee, which I'm a member of, along with four other members. Those members include Richard Conti, Joe Igo, Mike O'Brien, and Judy Doshea. I believe I have that right. And Mr. McGee appeared before the committee this past Wednesday. And prior to that, the mayor submitted notice to the council of her appointment and the resume of her. I'm right near the train station. Made the appointment about 3 weeks ago, and now appeared before the law committee on Wednesday. So, Mr. McGee appeared, and I have to say I was very impressed in the sense that he's a clearly very intelligent man, very stand-up guy. I think he's very trustworthy, too. The issue was, and is, there is a tremendous lack of buildings and code enforcement experience with the mayor's pick, and perhaps most significantly, management experience. And that is so desperately needed in this department. And a lot of the council members who were not just on the committee but also present for the meeting, I think they glossed over that fact. I think, you know, it's one thing, and certainly is an important quality to be motivated and to be high energy, and of course to be intelligent and have, you know, the educational background. He's an attorney, which is definitely a plus. But in a department where we need some real experience, somebody who has a strong background, managerial background, but specifically a managerial background as it relates to buildings and code enforcement, we didn't get that with the mayor's appointee. And, you know, you can have all the energy you want, but if you don't have that kind of experience, unfortunately, I don't believe that this particular appointee is the right person to lead codes in the right direction. I'm sure you hear it all the time, Cynthia. Codes is one of the most significant issues facing our city, code enforcement. And part of the problem is that there's a lot of problems, and that's probably for a whole other conversation, but there's problems with underpaid staff, understaffing, and this general kind of culture that's been going on for a long time in Albany about, you know, picking and choosing where to enforce codes. So we needed somebody in there with that background. While I really think that the appointee was a stand-up guy and is a stand-up guy, not the right person to lead the department, which is why I voted no. And I was, you know, once again disappointed in my colleagues for kind of going with what the mayor said and voting yes on the confirmation. And most likely it will go to the full council for a full vote, and most likely Robert McGee will become the next director of buildings and regulatory compliance. I will be voting no on the confirmation as well. So that's kind of the long and short of it. And also with some train noises chimed in.
Now, how many people are on the committee?
Five people.
So mm-hmm. out of those five, were you the only person that voiced any kind of concern?
Well, I think most of the committee members had concerns, generally speaking, with codes. I mean, we all do. There's not a single council member or I think a single person in the city of Albany that will tell you that codes is anywhere near where it needs to be. So the other members expressed concerns generally about code enforcement in the city of Albany, wanted some commitments from Mr. McGee as far as being attentive to the needs of neighborhoods, attending neighborhood meetings, communicating with the council, and then talk more broadly about enforcement or lack thereof. I, however, really wanted to dig deeper into what Mr. McGee's experience is as it relates to buildings and code enforcement. And what came out was that it's minimal at best. And, you know, one of my questions as it related to management experience, I was very, very unsatisfied with the answer about management experience. Mr. McGee, while it was no doubt a learning experience for sure, used the year he spent managing the front end of a hotel, the cleaning staff at a local hotel, as an example of his management experience. That doesn't cut it. We need something a lot more than that in the department right now. And, like I said, unfortunately, I think the mayor made an unwise choice. She makes many unwise choices, but this is another example. So here we are. And yes, unfortunately, I yet again was one of the, in this instance, the only council member to raise specific concerns about the appointee, because I do believe that residents in Albany deserve the very best in our elected officials, but also our department heads. And it's getting a little old being the only council member or the only three or four of the council members who are willing to stand up and ask questions and if necessary, say no to the mayor.
Now, answer the hearing or after the meeting, when your colleagues realized that you aren't, you know, going with the flow, what was the reaction of your colleagues towards you after that meeting? Do they, like, not talk to you? Are they, like, do they talk bad about you? Tell me what happened.
Well, in that specific meeting, no one, followed up, and said, thanks for expressing your concern or anything like that. That's okay. I don't expect that. It's fine. I certainly didn't encounter any disrespect. That's for sure. Overall, it's generally avoidance. Every now and then, there will be some unprofessional remarks made by some members, because I am willing to stand up and question and say no when I think it's necessary, and that's unfortunate. So it is it's an interesting atmosphere on the Common Council. I was I was independently elected. I think it is important that every elected official exercise their own independent thought process and look at the situation, whatever that situation may be, and that particular set of circumstances, and come to a decision that is in the best interests of the people that elected them, and not simply serve as a rubber stamp for the mayor's office. And unfortunately, the Common Council has historically been just that, a rubber stamp for the mayor's office, no matter who the mayor has been.
You know, I find this a little bit, I don't know if amusing is the right word, but, you know, what's going on in Washington, D.C., where Boehner wants to step down and they really haven't anybody to replace him yet. And it's like there's a handful of members in the House of Representatives who are not willing to go along with the leadership. And it's causing
yep.
havoc.
Well,
on a national level.
Yeah, I would take a bet that the leadership in the Common Council would love to characterize myself, Frank Commisso, mainly myself and Frank Commisso, as obstructionists and people causing chaos on the council. But that's not the case here, not at all. We're talking over in the House, you know, we're talking about a group of, you know, hardcore right-wing, extremely conservative ideologues who totally are out of touch with reality. And this, we have, you know, local here, a local municipal body, and the council, by nature of our charter, is much weaker than the mayor. So things still get accomplished. They may not be the things that I want to see get done or how I want to see them get done, but things still are getting done. And I think that even though things like, for example, the appointment of Mr. McGee will likely go through, legislation such as red light cameras has gone through, the mayor's budget had no problem going through, which I think had significant errors in it, I do believe that even though, you know, I and several of my colleagues, including Frank Commisso, oftentimes Mike O'Brien, Ron Bailey, we still serve an important purpose in that we're raising, I think, valid questions, important questions, questions that I think our constituents expect us to ask. So, you know, in a more ideal situation, I think it would be better if colleagues would be willing to say no to the mayor when it is appropriate. And unfortunately, as I said, it is a pattern of saying yes to the mayor and finding a way to yes instead of coming in and saying, okay, let's think about this situation and this particular legislation, whatever the case may be, in a critical way, and then make a decision from there. So unfortunately, I think it's about how to get to yes with most of the council.
Okay. Now, you raised an interesting quote here. You say, out of touch with reality. Okay, mm-hmm. if a majority or many are a handful, I don't know how many there are, who go along with the mayor no matter
mm-hmm.
what.
Mm-hmm.
If on the mayor's part, if she's exhibiting faulty reasoning, those particular members who go along with the mayor, do they realize that they're harming the citizens? Not harming the citizens, but not looking after the best interests
mm-hmm.
of the citizens.
I think that, and I don't question it for a second, that every council member wants the best for the city. It's a lot easier when there is somebody at the top who is telling you what to do and telling you that, you know, this particular action is going to serve the best interests of your constituents in the city at large and trust in that without much questioning. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with being presented with information from the executive branch and taking that seriously. It should be taken seriously. But it should not be the end-all be-all. And I think it's been apparent from the very beginning of this term that if the mayor signs off on it and is okay with it, then that is good enough for a lot of my colleagues on the council. I know that no one on the council wants anyone to get harmed through their decisions as policymakers, as common council members. I do, though, again, think it is critically important that folks use their independent thought process. Every member has, I think, a valuable set of experiences to bring to the table, a set of values that are important to bring to the table, and I think each one of them are very, very intelligent. So I think collectively, if that all of that kind of brain power was used, we'd come up with much better results in the city. No single person has all the answers. They never will. They never have. So I wish that were going on. Now, you mentioned the mayor's faulty reasoning, and that's kind of the problem here is when you defer almost exclusively to a single individual, in this case being the mayor. The mayor has made very, very foolish decisions, specifically with respect to the budget. Most notably, one of the most notable examples is with the $2 million line item for red light cameras that we were supposed to get this year. The mayor said during her budget presentation for 2016 that we'll get around $200,000 to $300,000, obviously a far, far cry from the projected $2 million. I raised questions about that, so did others, yet the mayor continued to put that into the budget. And it was interesting. The mayor was on another radio station, I don't know which one it is off the top of my head, but had the shocking analysis that the reason the city did not see that $2 million in revenue or anywhere near that was because, and she specifically named me, was because I was asking a lot of questions about the program. And that's just absurd. It's false. The mayor knows it's false. It was a very silly statement. And that is another example of sort of a lack of logical thinking from somebody who is very intelligent.
Okay. Now, maybe I used the wrong terminology. Maybe I was a little bit too harsh. But what I was trying to express was lockstep. Why are there not more independent voices on the common council?
I don't know. It's a really interesting question. I think with a lot of legislative bodies, you see this. It's not something that's unique to Albany. You see it at many levels of government, different areas of the country where legislators will follow in lockstep either with the leader of their particular caucus or the executive. I don't know. It's a really interesting political science question, and I'm not smart enough to answer that question in any way that I think would be worthwhile. But I know what I do know is it's a problem because, again, we all have our own set of experiences, and we all have something very, very valuable to bring to the table. In crafting public policy, which directly impacts the lives of the people that we represent. And I think when the more voices, the more ideas that are brought to the table, the better quality product you get out of that. Lockstep is the easy way. It's the lazy way to legislate. When you have a group of lawyers in the mayor's office and the mayor promulgating a certain policy and making an argument for it, and it may be compelling in the minds of some. It provides the argument, it provides the justification, and it saves a whole heck of a lot of time to examine an issue independent of what the mayor has said. So again, certainly take what's coming from the executive's office seriously, not dismiss it outright, of course not, but that needs to be done in tandem with that independent critical thinking of whatever the issue might be, especially when the stakes are high, you know, especially when we're talking about our codes department, especially when we're talking about our budget, which is a very scary, frankly, situation right now. You have to take a step back, examine the situation as an independent thinker, and come to your own conclusions, come up with some ideas, and go from there, and not allow yourself to be told what to do.
Now, what's on the horizon for the Common Council?
Well, we are going to get underway with our budget process very soon. We'll have our first public hearing, I believe, this coming week or the week after. I need to double check. We'll start our specific departmental budget hearings, and then we'll go from there. The budget for this year is, as I said, it's pretty scary. You know, there are some controversial items in there, I think most notably this year being the garbage tax, and it is a tax. It's not a fee, it's a tax. I think it's a double tax, but the bottom line is that what's built into this budget, as many of your listeners know, as you know, Cynthia, is this additional $12.5 million ask from the state in aid. And if that doesn't come through, if 100% of that ask doesn't come through, then we are looking at some very, very serious cuts. I don't know what those cuts are because the mayor has not given us the plan. If indeed the state comes back with, say, 50% of the ask, none of the ask, you know, 25% of the ask, something to that effect. So really, there's a level, and I hate to say this because it shouldn't be this way, but there is a level of irrelevance to the budget process this year because of this gamble, this huge gamble that's thrown into the budget process, which is this $12.5 million additional ask from the state. The budget process is going to start in January with the state. They'll hopefully wrap up on time in the early spring. We'll see. It could drag on. We've seen it drag on before. And it's going to keep the city, but most importantly, the city's residents in a state of limbo, because if the state doesn't come back with, like I said, 100% of that ask, $12.5 million, then city services are going to take a really, really significant hit. And I don't think it's right to leave residents in limbo. I think that, you know, it is important that residents know that if the state does not come through with all or part of that money, what the mayor's plan is, because it is on the mayor to craft a budget where she wants to make those cuts. So there, you know, we'll have these budget hearings, we'll have with different departments, we'll listen to public comment, but all of it could be for show in the event the state does not come back with that $12.5 million in additional aid. So there is a level of irrelevance to this budget cycle, given that it is so reliant, almost entirely reliant on what the state legislature and the governor will do. I hope we get the money. I really am dreading to see what that plan would look like if we don't get all or part, if we don't get all of that aid. So we'll have to see. And I hope that before the council acts on the budget, we're provided with some kind of sense of what the mayor is looking at to cut if the state doesn't pony up the cash. So we'll have to see. And I wish I could give you and your listeners and my constituents more information than that, but unfortunately, there isn't much more information to give.
Okay. Now, as the session, your legislative session unfolds,
yeah,
will you come back and focus on Albany and give us updates?
Absolutely, Cynthia. You know I will.
Thank you. Thank you. You've been listening to Judd Krasher. You've been listening to Focus on Albany. If you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and download on your smartphone anytime, anywhere. Have a great rest of the weekend, everybody. Thanks, Judd. Have a good day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.